Welcome, everyone, back to Understanding Climate Finance. My name is Fahim Nurali. I'm the Climate Finance Trade Commissioner based out of the Embassy of Canada in Washington, D.C. I know it's been a while since our last podcast, but today I'm really excited about our guest. So it's my pleasure to welcome Lori Kerr to the podcast. Lori joined FinDev Canada as the Chief Executive Officer in June 2021, leveraging her strong reputation as an international development finance professional at some of the most reputable DFIs for this current role. She has more than two decades of leadership in private investment in emerging markets with a focus on sustainable infrastructure, climate finance, and blended finance. Prior to joining FinDev Canada, Lori led corporate strategy, thought leadership, partnerships, and international engagement at the Global Infrastructure Facility at the World Bank and spent 18 years at the Inter-American Development Bank Group, serving in management and senior investment roles, where she spearheaded strategic initiatives to support the expansion and development impact of private sector activities, as well as private sector transaction origination, structuring, and asset management. Also, while in DC, she spent 14 years as an adjunct professor of international project finance and investment at the Georgetown University School of Foreign Service. So I can go on and on about Lori. I've known Lori since I started this job, and she's been an amazing guide and an amazing mentor to me and others on climate finance. So I can honestly say she's one of the nicest people you will ever meet. And I'm not trying to make her blush, but it is really my unbiased opinion. So thank you so much, Lori, for being part of this podcast.
Thank you so much, Fahim. It's really great to be here. And indeed, I am blushing. Thank you so much for that super kind introduction.
Of course. No, thank you so much. And I'm glad that we were able to do this while you're in DC. I know you travel quite a bit for work, and it's great that we could do this in person. I'm really happy about that.
Absolutely. It's great to be back in DC, and it's really great to see you.
Yeah. So I thought maybe we could go into your role as CEO of FinDev Canada. And you've been the CEO for just over a year. And how would you describe your experience so far?
So indeed, I took over as CEO in June of last year. So I am just celebrating my first anniversary. So that's super exciting. And it has been really an amazing ride, which I'm looking forward to talking about today. Maybe just to give a little bit of context, as you may recall, FinDev Canada was established in 2018. So COVID hit not too long after, you know, like a year or so after the organization really got its footing. And the pandemic, of course, affected operations of every company and every development finance organization across the world. So we had to figure out, you know, how to continue to serve our clients and work with our partners, while at the same time contending with the health and safety of our own staff at FinDev Canada. You know, as a result of the pandemic, we know that decades of development gains have been reversed. It has triggered the most synchronous economic downturn in more than a century. You probably know, but 99% of countries posted declines in real per cap GDP in 2020. And that's more than any other year since 1900. And in that time, we've had two world wars and the economic depression of the 1930s. And you probably know as well that the World Bank estimated this past spring that the health crisis pushed an estimated 120 million people into extreme poverty, and the inequalities that existed before are now exacerbated, affecting disproportionately low-income countries, populations vulnerable to climate change, and of course, women. And on top of all of the health aspects of COVID in the last year, there's been repercussions that have affected private enterprise, especially in emerging markets. Supply chains have been disrupted across industries, a sudden fall, then a steady rise in the price of oil on world markets. Tourism, huge impacts. Tourism makes up a big part of GDP in many of our client countries. And where we are now, the beginnings of a global inflationary period, throwing all projections off balance because businesses simply don't know what to expect tomorrow. And there's more new international security threats, including the current war in Ukraine, Brexit before I joined that had, that's having ripple effects, and elections in various countries in Africa and Latin America and the Caribbean that also have contributed to hesitant see on the part of international investors. So in short, the past year has been absolutely an incredible journey. Lots going on in the past year. Decision-making has been made more complex. And so the decisions that we make, our investment decisions, are more profound than ever.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's been a really tough year. And I think that really underscores why we need organizations like FinDev Canada and your complementary American organization, the Development Finance Corporation, who we talked to in our last podcast. And the DFC came about just around the same time FinDev Canada did as well. So I think that just really underscores how important your role is. And so can you tell me what's struck you about FinDev Canada as you've settled into your role?
Yeah. So, I mean, as I mentioned, I took over in the middle of a global pandemic. And even before I came in, I knew that FinDev Canada was an impressive organization. It's one of the things that drew me to the organization. And that sentiment has only grown stronger over the past year. First, FinDev Canada is a young organization. Like I said, we started operations in 2018. And so we're really the new kids on the block when it comes to development finance. And with that comes tremendous opportunity to chart our pathway with a fresh slate and be thoughtful about where we can add value in the markets that we serve. That's about the organization. When I came in, I also saw that we have an incredibly impassioned and committed team to development finance, some of the best professionals in the world that were ready then and are ready now to tackle existing and new development finance challenges. When I joined, the team was already pivoting to the new reality of supporting development while adjusting to a COVID-19 world. To help our clients, we became faster, more agile, more responsive to their needs. And their needs, let's be honest, were significantly greater than they had been just a few months earlier. A lot of really amazing things happened in 2021 for our organization. We doubled our commitments during the year, reaching almost $300 million, which matches our initial capital, which is a pretty incredible feat considering, you know, most of that growth happened during COVID. We had a lot of first loans in the Caribbean to JMNB, which is a bank in Jamaica. We're very proud that we also launched 2X Canada, which is a blended finance facility in partnership with the Government of Canada, which really allows us to increase our impact on women's economic empowerment. And we're super happy to have approved our first blended finance deal with the Energy Entrepreneurs Growth Fund that contributes to greater access to clean energy in Africa. And the other first is we launched our first climate change strategy last year at COP, which renews our commitment to supporting climate finance and development.
Oh, wow. You're looking at climate, looking at gender. So clearly a lot going on. And the shift to blended finance, or going into, I don't know if shift is the right word, but getting into blended finance is something that's relatively new, I think, for FinDev Canada. So can you share how FinDev Canada has changed its business model, its focus, its strategy, and even looking at its current strategy, you know, where are your priority countries, your priority sectors for those who are really looking to work with FinDev Canada as an investment partner?
Sure, absolutely. So a little bit about what we're focused on, and maybe I can talk a little bit about how FinDev Canada, you know, shifted as a result of the pandemic. You know, if we're looking at, is our strategy kind of the same now or different than when we started the pandemic? I guess the answer would be, you know, partly yes and part no. Knowing that we continued with our core strategy, which is affecting development through the private sector, providing financing and investment to the private sector in the developing countries within which we operate. Our three impact goals remain as important as ever: women's economic empowerment, climate action, and market development. These are the impact goals that drive our investment decision making. And this was sort of the framework that was in place when FinDev Canada was set up before the pandemic in 2018. And these remain as important, even more important now after as we're emerging from the pandemic. But in the pandemic time, we did shift a little bit in response, and we focused more on financial intermediaries to get liquidity to where it's needed most in support of private enterprise in local markets, supporting micro and small and medium-sized enterprises, and to support women-owned and women-led businesses. These are the backbones of economic growth in the markets that we serve, and supporting access to finance has really been critical through the pandemic. I also mentioned that we brought forth the blended finance solutions as part of our toolkit through a partnership with Global Affairs Canada, that 2X Canada concessional finance facility that I just mentioned. And looking ahead, we're hoping and intending to expand our blended finance options to support climate, particularly as a way to mobilize more private investment in and into emerging markets. In addition to the financing and the investment that we offer and blended finance solution, I'd also mention that we have advanced our technical assistance facility And our TA facility provides grant financing and grant funding, working with clients in many countries to help them deepen their abilities to transform, deliver more value to end customers, and increase their competitive advantages, particularly in the areas of women's economic empowerment, gender equality, and climate. So the technical assistance facility is something that we're looking to build out as well. And one other aspect of FinDev Canada, which is really important, is the value of the partnerships that we have. Before the pandemic, FinDev Canada, you know, we don't have regional presence yet. And so when the pandemic hit, we were kind of landlocked in Montreal. And so what we did is we really worked through our partnerships, through bilateral development finance institutions and with the multilateral development banks, as well as with the private sector. And so during the pandemic, the value of partnerships really shone through to us. And that's something that we're looking to do, work with partnerships even more going forward, because we can accomplish a lot more together. So we're super excited about that. But overall, going forward, we remain committed to our three impact goals. Again, women's economic empowerment, climate action, and market and development. And we intend to expand our efforts to mobilize even more private capital in and into developing markets in the years ahead.
That's great. And I think you touched on a couple of things, but you said the magic word, which I'm sure everyone's perked up, which is TA facility and grant funding. So my question with regards to grant funding is, what are you looking for when, or what is the eligibility for grant funding? And is it tied to an investment that FinDev Canada would have to make?
So our technical assistance facility sort of has two orientations. The first orientation is indeed to support the clients that we're providing financing or investment to help them deepen the impact with their clients that they're serving. Again, primarily around the areas of women's economic empowerment, gender equality, climate action, environmental and social, as well as data gathering. So we do work through our technical assistance facility with clients of FinDev Canada. The other orientation of our technical assistance facility is to support what we call market development initiatives. And these are initiatives that we fund and we work with partners to support interventions that have more of a market development angle to them. So aren't necessarily tied to a specific investment, but push the needle in terms of, again, women's economic empowerment, climate, environmental and social, thought leadership, et cetera, et cetera. So again, we have these two areas, working with clients and then market development type of initiatives.
Oh, great. And I mean, since we're sort of on the topic, when you're looking at projects or even financial partners, what are sort of the parameters of your investment? I mean, I know, for example, AFC won't go into more than 50% of the capital structure. What are some of the when project developers are looking to work with FinDev Canada, what should they prepare for?
Well, the first thing would be to, you know, understand where we operate. So there's a couple of things in that regard. So first of all, heretofore, our core geography in emerging markets are Latin America and the Caribbean and Sub-Saharan Africa. So that's where we're primarily focused. The products that we offer are debt and equity, blended finance solutions and technical assistance, as I mentioned. We do have a guarantee product that we're looking to leverage in the future. We haven't used that to date. We're primarily focused on debt and equity at the moment and all different swaths of each one of those types of instruments and the sectors that we operate in. So as I mentioned earlier, particularly related to the pandemic, we work a lot with financial intermediaries, so local banks, other types of financial institutions and investment funds. This will continue to be an important part of our business, as it is with all development finance institutions going forward. So working with financial intermediaries. The second sector that we're very interested in is ag and agribusiness value chain, ag and forestry. And the third sector that we are looking to expand in is in the area of sustainable infrastructure. We previously called it green growth, but we're really looking to double down on sustainable infrastructure. And what that means and where our sweet spot is in that small and mid-market infrastructure space. So in terms of, you know, a ticket size, it would be up to, let's say, or total project cost would be up to, you know, let's say 250 or 300 million. So again, that small and mid-market size, which is a little bit of a differentiator from some of the other development finance institutions. And then we would certainly entertain transactions in, you know, retail or manufacturing or what have you. But again, we're always guided by our three impact goals and how are we supporting, again, gender equality, women's economic empowerment, climate action, and market development. So that's what we look through. Those are the lenses through which we look, and we would be looking for any transaction, any client that we support to also have an impact those areas. So again, that small and medium-sized space is really what we're focused on heretofore, and as we grow our own balance sheet and we become a bigger player in the development finance ecosystem.
I think you're really hitting a niche in that sort of smaller and medium size, which, you know, a lot of organizations don't. So what is the sort of minimum that you're looking for? And I know it can vary by sector, but just generally.
Sure, absolutely. So we've done transactions as small as $5 million and some even less than that. Mm-hmm. What we are sort of targeting, let's say, would be between $10 and $75 million. But again, for the right impact, we'd certainly be willing to go lower than that. And we have gone lower than that as well. Mm-hmm. What we're looking for is to have opportunities for impact, to be an influential partner, and to really, you know, partner with our clients, our investees, or our borrowers, mm-hmm. to really add value and have impact in those three parameters that I mentioned before.
And just looking at the, you had mentioned debt. Do you prefer a senior position, or, you know, when you're looking at debt, where do you want to sort of be in that capital structure?
So I would say that up until now, senior debt has been the most, you know, typical instrument mm-hmm. that we've used, but we are open to other types of, you know, subordinated or more junior positions. It really depends on what is the nature of the transaction that we're supporting, what are the needs of the capital structure mm-hmm. of the various transactions. One of the things that I've found really refreshing and exciting about FinDev Canada is because we are a young institution, we're able, you know, we're the DNA of the institution is really to be agile and flexible and expeditious, let's say, and really meeting the client where they are. So we're really looking to be client centric. We have been, and we're really looking forward to maintain that client centricity going forward. So we're able to be flexible and really look at what are the needs of the individual transaction, and we can tailor our products and what we offer to that.
Okay. So I think, you know, we sort of talked about everything that you're sort of doing now and building up now. In a year from now, where do you see FinDev Canada going, and what will surprise me in 1 year? Especially, you know, you made all these COP announcements and commitment to gender and climate. Where do you want to see FinDev in a year?
Sure. So it's a great question. So what I'd love to be able to surprise you with is our data, and to show you how we've really been able to have incredible impacts and outcomes on our three impact goals. Again, women's economic empowerment, climate action, and market development. I'd love to be able to show you how much private capital we've been able to mobilize in support of those impact goals, and how much we've been able to partner and provide additional value added to our partners and to our clients through our technical assistance facility, and bringing blended finance solutions as well to our clients, and really tapping into the huge movement underfoot in climate finance to really, again, mobilize capital to where it's needed most. So those would be all the things that I would love to be able to surprise you with, how much we've grown in a year, but not just grown, but growth with purpose. That's sort of our mantra at FinDev Canada these days as we're going through a strategy refresh exercise, is growth, but growth with purpose.
I like that. I like that as a purpose. Well, I had mentioned that, you know, you've been in Washington for a while before coming to FinDev, and you've worked at IDB, and you've worked at the World Bank. So the question is more, you know, you've worked in development finance here in DC, and now you've moved to Montreal, now leading this FinDev Canada. So it's really to get your observation as how development finance has changed over the course of your career.
Thanks. That's a really interesting question. I would maybe share three observations in terms of how I view development finance has changed over the course of the last couple of decades. So the first observation would be, certainly development finance has become even more impact oriented. I think in particular, you know, the three impact goals that we hold high at FinDev Canada are shared in different ways and maybe articulated in different ways across the development finance ecosystem. But certainly climate, as you know, the existential crisis, has really evolved, not just in the last 20 years, but particularly, you know, since the Paris Agreement, has become even more intense. We have very little time, you know, to really make an impact before it's too late to maintain temperatures below 1.5 Celsius. So the imperative behind climate change is absolutely at the forefront. I would say that the understanding and the appreciation of diversity diversion, equity, and inclusion has also become more important across the development finance institutions. And I would also say the impetus to mobilize private capital. I think it's always been part of sort of the DNA of the development finance institutions, but it's really more critical than ever. I mean, we see that, you know, because of the climate crisis, public budgets alone are insufficient, you know, mm-hmm. to fund what needs to be done to guard against the climate crisis and adapt to the climate crisis. With the COVID pandemic, government budgets are even further retrenched. And now with war in Ukraine, there's so much pressure on public budgets that impetus to mobilize more private investment to address the many crises that we are facing that have outsized impacts on emerging markets has really been brought to the fore. So I think that we'll see, and we have seen that the mobilization of private capital is front and center, whether you're an MDB or whether you're a bilateral DFI is really front and center for most.
Right. And I mean, we had the announcement of GFANZ at the last COP, the Global Financial
Alliance
for Net Zero. And so do you feel that, you know, we're working with GFANZ and other sort of private sector banks will really help us get to that at least 2-degree goal, if not 1.5 degree goal?
You know, I'm optimistic, and I will say that I did feel a tide shift at last COP in that the private sector was really engaged. I mean, we saw GFANZ, we take shape, take root. We saw the expansion of that and the number of new members that joined up to that, the number of new partners that joined up to that. So I really felt that there was a different sense from the private sector at mm-hmm. COP last year, and hopefully we'll see even more of that at COP in 2022. But I do think that there is a lot more engagement. There's a lot more awareness. And at least in my conversation, there's a lot more interest and understanding that there is a need. And so the role that the development finance institutions can play is how can we bridge that gap and how can we make, you know, how can we bridge that gap and really find and support and facilitate investable opportunities for the private sector? Because at the end of the day, showing that there is investable opportunities in emerging markets is one of the best things that we can do to open up that flow for private investment.
So when you're looking at opportunities in emerging markets, I mean, specifically looking at climate, you have climate adaptation opportunities and climate mitigation opportunities. And adaptation opportunities generally haven't been too investable in the past. Is there a role for development finance institutions right now to invest in climate adaptation, or is that still sort of something that would be more dependent on government to government assistance?
Yeah, I think it's an evolving sector, if one could put it that way. It's certainly the need is there and the opportunities are emerging. And you're absolutely right in that there's, you know, perceived less investability right now in sort of the adaptation space that, you know, when one compares to mitigation. But that's part of the role of development finance institutions is to really make those markets. There's a movement across the development finance partners, the Adaptation and Resilience Collaborative, that's really looking, there's a number of different aspects to their sort of work plan, if you will. But one of them is looking at how to suss out investable opportunities in adaptation and resilience. So there's certainly a need for it. There's the age-old question of, are these opportunities 100% focused on adaptation and resilience, or do they incorporate adaptation and resilience elements to it? And that, you know, we need to evolve in both factors, but mm-hmm. looking through that climate lens and making sure that even more traditional investment opportunities, regardless of the sector, take into account adaptation and resilience is absolutely something that we do and something that is necessary going forward.
Okay.
That's terrible.
And then just shifting a little bit to the other priority, which is gender. When you're looking at gender lens investing, what does that mean to you? What does that mean to FinDev Canada?
So FinDev Canada is certainly a gender lens investor, and that's something that has been part of our DNA since we were established in 2018. And that means a number of different things to us. One, that means working with our clients, whether it's a financial intermediary or whether it's a direct investment, to understand through an employment and through a leadership lens, what are the opportunities, either current or in the future, for women to be part of that, to offer good quality jobs with good benefits, with good policies that support women employees, as well as availing opportunities for women to become part of the leadership, whether it's management or in the board or what have you. So there's that employment and leadership perspective. Now, certainly when we're looking at financial institutions and intermediaries, we also look at do those intermediaries offer products and services that are specifically geared towards women? And so the 2X challenge, which was created around the time that FinDev Canada was created, which started out as a collaborative of the G7 DFIs to support gender lens investing. And there was a goal back in 2018 of $3 billion, which they exceeded. And there's a much broader goal that was brought in last year of $8 billion. And the membership has expanded with the 2X. And there's criteria that have been established under that, again, related to products and services, related to employment, and related to leadership. So there's a fairly comprehensive criteria that we've been able to use. And again, particularly since we've been focused so much on financial intermediaries related to, as a result of the COVID crisis, our response to it, we've been applying that in a very robust way with our intermediary transactions.
Okay. That's good. I think the priority around gender lens investing is so important. And I'm sure that in the future, we'll see that evolve as well. I mean, you see I can't think of one organization that hasn't explicitly talked about gender lens investing and climate change investing, because really those are really key components to economic progress.
Absolutely. And again, those were with women's economic empowerment, climate action, and market development, those were FinDev Canada's three original impact goals. And I started in January, we initiated a strategy refresh process. And I have to say that it's really been a validation process of those three impact goals for exactly the reasons that you say, that the opportunity for impact really align themselves around those three dimensions. So those will be, again, key to how we look at supporting through financing and investment and technical assistance and blended finance solution, all the tools that we have in our toolkit along those three dimensions.
Okay. Yeah. And the last aspect, that the last sort of key was the market development part of it. And you had mentioned having to work with partners, particularly as the pandemic started. Can you provide some examples of how FinDev Canada has invested into market development?
Sure. So maybe a couple of opportunities that come to mind that are not just on market development, but also support or contribute to some of our other impact goals. And I'll just give you an example. So one example is we provided a $20 million loan to EcoBank, which is a bank in Africa, to small and medium-sized businesses in Africa. SMEs make up about 90% of the businesses in Africa, yet they struggle to find affordable financing to grow. According to the data, there is, you know, some investment gap of $136 billion between the credit that SMEs need and what the market can offer. So EcoBank has a very strong presence among these businesses with more than 800,000 clients, and at least half of them are women-owned or women-led in the five largest markets that EcoBank operates in. So we've supported EcoBank with this $20 million financing. And 30% of that loan is dedicated to supporting women-led or women-owned small and medium-sized enterprises. So the SME sector in Africa, again, engine of growth, will get a tremendous boost as it related to our financing. So that's just one example of how we've supported two of our impact goals, market development and gender action, which is ideally, you know, where those Venns overlap are opportunities that we'd love to pursue.
Yeah, that certainly is the sweet spot. My last question is, how should Canadian project developers prepare for a meeting with FinDev Canada? What's the homework that they should do before talking to any of your colleagues? And a number of them have, and they've been very responsive, and FinDev has been a great partner. But what would you like, you know, Canadian project developers to know before having a meeting with FinDev Canada?
It's great to know that the FinDev Canada team has been responsive. I would be shocked otherwise. So that's really great to hear. And it's always a great opportunity to partner with companies in Canada and beyond that are interested in support in investing in emerging markets. So that's music to my ears. I guess the first would be to, you know, again, understand where we operate, our key geographies, Latin America and the Caribbean and Sub-Saharan Africa, the sector sectors that we're working in, ag, agribusiness value chain, doing more in sustainable infrastructure, and then other sectors as opportunities arise that fit with our impact goals. And of course, working with local banks and financial institutions and investment funds. So kind of know where we operate. I would say the biggest thing to know is that we are a commercial investor, that we're not we don't provide subsidized investment. We do have access to blended finance solutions, as I mentioned, that we do offer in circumstances when it's warranted. But what we're looking to do is really provide market-oriented solutions to the clients that we're either financing or that we're supporting. So if there's a sustainable business, and sustainable in a 360 kind of way on the environmental and social and in the climate, as well as on the financial side of things, those are the types of opportunities that we would be very interested in pursuing and seeing how we can add value through our financial products as well as through our non-financial value add.
Okay. And would you want them to, let's say, you know, they're building out a solar project in East Africa. I'm just sort of going on the top of my head. Clearly, that's something that you would be interested in. Would you want them to already have other financial partners committed, or how would you want them to be prepared financially?
Great question. So my response would be, you have to have a solid business plan. Mm-hmm. You know, if all of the equity has not been identified yet, then we could certainly have a conversation. Typically, what we find is that the equity is together, and then organizations or companies are looking for debt. But if you don't have the whole plan together, then that's fine. We can still have a conversation, but we would certainly be looking for, again, that sustainable business plan. You know, where are you in your contracts? You know, do you have a concession? Do you have a PPA? Is there an EPC contractor? I mean, we can work through the life cycle of a project from very early on, but we're not the developer in and of ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't necessarily go in to develop those projects, but we do like to be a partner with those who are developing the projects. So companies that have, you know, either, you know, have a concession, like understanding the contractual reality of the project that they're trying to implement, have a robust business plan that includes a functioning financial model, and ideally partners at the table as well. But we're interested and we're able to have conversations earlier on. Mm-hmm. But it's that solidity and appreciation for a sustainable business plan that is really key to initiate conversation.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. And something to reinforce across every institution that you're looking for, and good advice for the client. So thank you so much, Lori, for being a part of the podcast, for coming to DC and taking time to meet with me and to just, you know, have this great conversation.
Thank you so much, Fahim. It's really been great to be here, and I hope to come back in a year and surprise you with how much we've grown and how much we've grown with purpose.
I'm pretty certain it can't be a surprise if I already know, right? But I know that you'll reach that goal. Thank you, everyone, for joining the podcast. I look forward to our next podcast, but in the meantime, I hope you enjoy the summer. Please feel free to reach out to myself if you are interested in talking with FinDev Canada, and I'm happy to connect you, as well as my colleagues based in London, Abidjan, and Manila. This has been a production of the Embassy of Canada in Washington, D.C., and I look forward to our next podcast. Thank you.